Don Crow Show on WAVA. And again, coming to you live from the wonderful facilities of the Museum of the Bible. Beautiful broadcast facilities, part of this great facility. I tell you, it's amazing, folks. I hope that the program has whetted your appetite in that regard as well, because this is an experience of a lifetime that you have sitting right in the nation's capital. And it's such a blessing to be able to see all the history of the Bible and so much more. It's also a place and a venue for activities such as the one we're talking about right now, and that is the Christian Abolition Coalition, which is the first ever sponsored by the Samaritan Women. And that is an organization founded by Jean Ellert. She is the founder and the executive director, along with others who I'm sure are helping carry the load. And as a matter of fact, if you want to partner with them, you can go to their website, and Samaritan Women,
thesamaritanwomen.org.
And you can check it out, because I'm sure they would welcome all the help you can give them prayer-wise, financially, and otherwise. And that's really what I wanted to ask about, the need for the American people, and especially the community of faith and the churches and the community of faith at large, to get involved, get informed, then get involved. Talk about how important that is and how that can happen.
Sure. So we also concurrently study this landscape of what other victim services are out there. And we have identified about 174 shelters across the United States that specialize in victims of trafficking. That's a very, very small number, because the average shelter has about 6 beds. And so we, by Department of Justice estimates, there's maybe 100,000 children that are currently victims of trafficking in this country, and an untold number of adults. So if you just do the math, there's not enough provision of services. We also did a study this year to identify where those shelters are located, and we found that there are still 16 states that don't have any shelter at all, and 6 states that have only one. And so there's plenty of opportunity. Here's what's doubly exciting, though, is that of the shelters that are available, about 90% of them are Christian or run by Christians, coming at this from a faith-based perspective. Now, we need to celebrate that. But I say that to your listeners because the invitation is for others to join us in this work. Not only do we need more shelters, but any shelter that you have, restorative program for victims of trafficking, needs tremendous community support. We have to be connected to the service providers in the area. We very much rely on Christians who have professions other than what we do to donate services, to be on our boards, to volunteer. So I'll give you one example. Up in Baltimore, we have a dentist, Dr. Waddell, and he said, "What can I do to help?" So of course, he could write a check and support us financially, but he has gifted us far beyond what we could have imagined. He provides free dental care to all of our women, and he's gone as far as simple cavities to full dentures. Over the last 10 years, we have also realized that dental care is the number one health need of victims of trafficking, because they have very poor nutrition and they get hit in the face a lot. So they have a lot of trouble. So his contribution of his talent, of his business, coming alongside a shelter. So I offer that as a model, because you might be somebody who has a surplus in your office supply store. You might be somebody who's a lawyer who could give pro bono services. You might be one that we use a lot is a teacher or a homeschooler, and now your kids have graduated. We need all of the faithful in their gifting to lend to this work.
Again, that website, please note it, because I'm sure you're provoking some thought on the part of people who didn't have any idea how they could help. It's thesamaritanwomen.org, thesamaritanwomen.org. I assume there's a phone number there if they want to contact you as well.
Yeah, but many ways in which they can submit an email depending upon their areas of interest.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Talk for a moment about legislation that needs to be put in place that isn't, from a federal level, from a state level as well. Are there some areas there that need advocacy and talking with the politicians, so to speak?
Yes. And so let's look at the state level. I would encourage all of your listeners to examine what the human trafficking statutes are that are in place within their state, because they're not the same from state to state. So, for example, in Maryland, we have the trafficking of a minor as a felony, but the trafficking of an adult is still a misdemeanor. In the state of Virginia, they have much higher penalties associated with trafficking than we do in Maryland. Now, the reason it's important for us to look at this across the nation is because traffickers are geographically agnostic. They're going to move wherever the land is most fertile, where there's a lot of money, where there is a consumer base for that, and I'm talking specifically about sex trafficking, but also where the laws are the weakest. And so it makes, in an indirect way, it makes Maryland an attractive destination because it's maybe a $500 fine. And so that for the trafficking of an adult. Now, I will say on the upside that Maryland has asserted that it's going to look to change that. So we could use some citizen advocacy now saying, yes, I support the fact that no human being should be enslaved, regardless of age. That's a problem that we can address. I think there are other areas. There is movement on whether or not we expunge or vacate the charges of a trafficked person while they were being exploited. So the scenario goes like this. Let's say that a girl is 19 years old. She's been trafficked for 2 years and she didn't make quota for that evening. So she was told, you don't make quota, you get beaten. She goes and she robs a store, right? She gets arrested for that. She has a charge. I'm not disputing the fact that she robbed the store, but it does present a complication when there was a coercive element that prompted that activity. And I think we have to look at those scenarios, maybe on a case-by-case basis, but that's another area of law that is being debated right now, is whether or not people should be held culpable for the crimes committed under coercion.
So all of that to say there's a lot of work to be done?
There's a lot of work to be done.
Final word that you have for us for this visit?
I can't say enough about the power of prayer. We have certainly seen it today. We've been praying over this event for a long, long time, and people across the country have been praying for us. And it was an extraordinary experience to hear these voices all coming together, united under the banner of Christ, to make an impact in society. This is incredibly hard work. It's very, very difficult emotionally. And so even if you don't know any of us personally, we ask you, we covet your prayers.
On that note, folks, I hope you pick up on that and put the Samaritan Women and their staff, their director, Jean Allard, and others on your prayer list. As she said, you may not ever meet her, but she's a fellow believer, a follower of the Lord Jesus. And in any event, it's a problem that all of us, even if you're not necessarily a person of Christian faith, these are human concerns that every sensible, rational human being ought to care about. Thank you for dropping by, and thank you for making so many guests available to us today.
My pleasure.
Again, Jean Allard, SamaritanWomen.org is the website, thesamaritanwomen.org. And stay with us. We're going to come back and wrap the hour up in just a couple of minutes here at the museum.